"This is a republic if you can keep it," with former Democratic Party Chairman Mark Brewer and former Republican Party Executive Director Jeff Timmer.
Welcome back to A Republic If You Can Keep It. I'm Mark Brewer.
And I'm Jeff Timmer. The United States Supreme Court continues to upend the nation with three rulings, at least so far, that have long been part of the conservative agenda, led by overturning Roe, strengthening gun rights, and blurring the separation of church and state in favor of public funding for religious education.
And speaking of upending, the January 6th committee hearings have just been off the charts in terms of the revelations. We'll talk about those. And we've also got some new polling on the Republican gubernatorial race showing that half of the Republican voters are undecided, even as absentee ballots start arriving in mailboxes. So let's get started, Jeff. I want to get your take on what's going on the abortion front. We're getting more polling data now about the potential political impact of what's going on with Roe v. Wade being overruled and all the drama that's now occurring in every state across the country. What's your take?
Well, last week when we recorded the podcast episode with Ken Coleman as our guest, I talked about unless the macro environment changes and changes appreciably, the red wave that is forecast nationally might come to fruition, that gas prices, food prices, et cetera, were going to be a dominant issue. Friday, the macro environment changed appreciably with the Dobbs decision issued by the majority, a 6-3 majority on the Supreme Court. And I'm able to say it's changed appreciably, at least for now, because there's been enough polling now, national polling, to show that the macro environment has changed and changed measurably. You know, one poll could be an outlier, two, maybe something's going on there. But when you start to get three and four and five polls that are showing significant movement, and when I say significant movement, I mean, movement in enthusiasm among Democratic base voters, movement in the generic congressional ballot test, which I think is more indicative of the direction of the election, the which way the wind is blowing, than any particular horse race at any point in time. And all of those numbers have moved significantly in favor of the Democrats in these last surveys in the last several days now, where the generic congressional environment now favors Democrats anywhere between 3 and 6 points nationally, which many observers say could be enough to put the control of the U.S. House back into play, where it's no longer a fait accompli that the Republicans take control. And all of this depends on, one, maintaining this level of outrage that the sizable majority of Americans have had, anxiety, concern, fear since the Dobbs decision, abject fear about criminalizing women in cases of abortion, real life cases of women showing up with ectopic pregnancies in emergency rooms and doctors not taking immediate action because they're unsure of the legalities in states like Missouri, for instance. Women, you know, coming to the brink of death while doctors check with lawyers after this decision. Those are real life consequences that scare the bejesus out of most people. And, you know, certainly the price of gas, the price of food remains a top issue. And if you ask people what's the foremost issue, they're going to say economy. But when it comes to motivating people to vote, something like abortion and this decision is certainly a motivator, and they know who to blame. There's clear indication who the bad guys are and who the good guys are. And that's not so clear on the economic and inflation issues.
I think, Jeff, I agree with you, but I also think here in Michigan particularly, this issue is not going to go away for several reasons. First, of course, there are the lawsuits that are pending, and the governor has been pushing, and she used the Dobbs decision last week to continue to push the Michigan Supreme Court to take up her case. In our own case, and I remind our listeners that I'm one of the lawyers for Planned Parenthood, in the case in which we obtained an injunction against the Michigan criminal statute, just today we filed our motion for summary disposition, asking the court to enter a permanent injunction against Michigan's criminal abortion law. That'll come up for a hearing in the next couple of months, and then there'll be appeals. So that is going to remain in the public eye. And of course, we expect within the week for the proponents of the constitutional amendment placing the right to choose in the state constitution to file their signatures. And if they make the ballot, that'll be a big topic in the fall. I think as Rich Zuba, who's been one of our guests, said in recent days, nobody in Michigan who's on the ballot is going to be able to escape taking a position on the issue of abortion, whether they think the current felony law should be enforced, whether they think Representative Kara's new law, which would make it even worse felony offense, whatever they think about the ballot question or the litigation, it's going to be inescapable that there's going to be a lot of discussion and debate here about abortion through the November election.
Agree completely. And we've seen some of that same confusion that I mentioned start to manifest itself in Michigan. We've had Spectrum Beaumont issue some muddled decisions on whether or not their facilities, their hospitals were going to continue to provide abortions. And then we've had some reporting yesterday, and I understand there's maybe perhaps a misunderstanding of this, but the Kent County prosecutor, it was reported, was going to enforce the 1931 abortion statute in defiance of the judge's stay. Now, I understand that might not be the case, but that kind of grandstanding or defiance from local prosecutors remains a real possibility, as those news reports did show.
Yeah, and just to be clear, so our listeners are clear, Spectrum Beaumont did initially say we're not going to do any more abortions. They were doing very, very few, actually, but they walked that back over the weekend, and they're back to where they were originally. And, you know, these prosecutors, and it escaped mention in the press yesterday, a shame on the Michigan press, I got to say, that Kent County prosecutor actually in his statement said he's not going to do anything until the pending lawsuits are resolved. He got all the publicity of being the guy who's going to enforce it, but actually his decision is not to do anything. And as we've indicated, and again, people know I'm the lawyer of Planned Parenthood, any prosecutor who attempts to defy that injunction, we're going to take them into court under contempt proceedings ASAP. We are not going to stand by and let that injunction be defied. But it's out there, certainly, in terms of, you know, people saying this. These are prosecutors attempting to, I think, intimidate people and scare them into not exercising their constitutional rights. So in that fashion, too, Jeff, you're absolutely right. These issues are not going to go away. And, of course, let me turn the topic here a little bit. This will play out differently in different races, right? I mean, in a solidly red or blue area, it may or may not be as much of an issue as in an area or a district in which there is more of a contest. It depends on the demographics of the district in terms of how this plays out. Certainly at the top of the ticket, it's going to be a big issue in those races. The governor, the attorney general, and even Jocelyn Benson have made it an issue. I don't think a day goes by I don't get a press release from Governor Whitmer or some announcement of some initiative. Today, she issued a letter calling on insurers to do the best they can to make sure that access to abortion is as accessible as possible. So she's certainly ginning it up as well. And I think you can tell, Jeff, that, and this correlates with the polling data, by who's talking about the issue and who is not, right? We see very few Republicans who are on the ballot talking about this issue. They don't want to talk about this. They want to talk about, well, the roads aren't fixed, or inflation is bad, and my gosh, what a terrible price you're paying for gas. They do not want to talk about what the Supreme Court did and the threat that imposes on women, and I think that's very telling as well.
There's one Republican candidate who has not been shy, especially today, in taking to Twitter and talking about his extreme position on abortion, and that's Attorney General nominee Matt DiPerno, who today has been all over up in Dana Nessel's grill, challenging her to debate on the issues of abortion and everything else, that he feels very confident that he can stand on ground. And I respond. Gave an official reply from the Dana Nessel campaign, which I am affiliated with, to Matt DiPerno, that said, I am, the campaign is willing to debate Matt DiPerno. One, when he becomes the official Republican nominee, which has not happened yet. Two, that he remains unindicted. And three, that he allows, Dana to Mirandize him at the beginning of the debate, that anything he says can and will be used against him in a court of law. Easy peasy, right? I mean, it seems like he should be able to accept those terms. But, Matt has been silent in response to my tweet. So, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. I mean, clearly he's playing Republican primary voter, or in his case, convention voter politics. But yeah, the extreme position he has taken on this issue just won't play well in a general election.
Well, and that shows the lack of any kind of grown-up supervision in his campaign, or certainly in his attitude. He's running a campaign that's still geared toward those convention delegates, which he has already secured their support, and has no comprehension he doesn't give a shit about appealing to a wider swath of Michigan voters. And I think that shows the kind of extremism we're going to be seeing at the top of the Republican ticket from Matt DiPerno, from Christina Caramo, from whether it's Tudor Dixon or Ryan Kelly or Kevin Rinke. We're going to see a campaign of radical, extreme, out of step with the majority of Michigan voters that's geared toward, and I've mentioned this before, toward turning out the Republican base voters in a mathematically larger proportion than they would otherwise be entitled. They think that this will be motivating to their base, that they're counting on some depression of or suppression of Democratic voters. But now with Roe, with the just explosive, well done January 6th hearings and so many other issues going on, we're seeing that equalizing of the macro environment, enthusiasm growing among Democratic voters, among independent voters, in a way that pushes them very strongly against the Republican position. And that's, I think, more telling. Jumping back a little bit to when we talked about the Dobbs decision and Roe being overturned and the shift in polling numbers, where the independent voters have been decidedly muddled or in favor of kind of generic Republican candidates against Gretchen Whitmer, against Joe Biden, against Alyssa Slotkin, whatever name the Democrat put them there. The independent voters are now very motivated on the issue of abortion. They're motivated on the issue of guns, issues that favor Democratic candidates. And if the Democrats can maintain the chunk of independent voters that we're seeing in these last surveys, it's going to be a much different election in November than people were forecasting a week ago. I think smart prognosticators are going to use the term red wave less and less and less as these next 4 months progress. Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
Epic MRA is pleased to be a sponsor of this podcast. Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm whose principals have more than four decades of experience measuring public opinion on federal, state, and local issues, from who's ahead in a race for governor or Congress to local support for a proposed zoning change.
Our clients include media outlets, school districts, state agencies, local governments, and membership organizations across the state. Whether it's measuring voter opinions about who's up or down in elections, or if ballot proposals or legislation enjoys public support, Epic MRA has been Michigan's premier go-to pollster for 30 years.
Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
When candidates and government leaders need the facts about their voters, they turn to practical political consulting.
PPC has served political candidates, organizations, campaigns, and businesses for more than 45 years. They work with savvy campaigns to provide the best voter lists available in Michigan, as well as campaign consulting, graphic design, and polling at competitive prices.
Over their storied history, PPC has worked with thousands of campaigns, providing them with, as the New York Times once said, quote, the best lists possible in this competitive state, along with unique and individualized strategy.
They've worked with small campaigns for rural school board, all the way up to occupants of the White House. They are also renowned for their work with ballot initiatives, both for challenges and protections.
Find out more. Go to www.practicalpoliticalconsulting.com or call 517-351-5105.
Gotta get to what's going on with the January 6th committee. I mean, that special hearing that was called this week to roll out the evidence from an insider in the White House and what she was able to reveal about Trump literally knew people were armed. He knew they were going to march on the Capitol, and he basically wanted to lead the mob, the armed mob, in the assault on the Capitol. I mean, just extraordinary stuff, plus more revelations about people wanting pardons, et cetera, et cetera. Again, so let me throw it back to you. What's your take on this amazing, most recent committee hearing?
Well, I think the sensational news, you know, the Trump trying to grab the steering wheel and, you know, trying to choke out his Secret Service detail and throwing ketchup against the wall, or throwing his lunch against the wall and ketchup dripping down the wall. Those are the kinds of things that have been in the headlines in the last 24 hours. But I think the most telling is what you touched on there, that Trump knew that people were armed, that the plan was that they would be armed. And I think the most important point hasn't been emphasized enough by any of the news coverage, and that he issued orders to remove the metal detectors to ensure that they could remain armed rather than have the Secret Service take their arms, their guns and knives away when they entered the secure area of the Ellipse where he was giving his speech. And that's not just that he thought they might be armed. He knew they were armed, and he was trying to manipulate the scenario to ensure that no one confiscated their weapons so that when they went to the Capitol, they would have those weapons and be able to use them. And that has added a whole new layer to this, to this narrative that has been unfolding here, some of which we've suspected, but now it's being, you know, put before us in stark pictures. They were showing, you know, people with AR-15s in trees, and the police chatter that was going on says they were spotting these folks. This was no happenstance. This was a coordinated, a deliberate attempt. And the whole intent was to bring the counting of the electoral votes, to halt it, to delay it, to prevent it in an effort to, who knows what, declare martial law, Trump get up. Think of how close, what would have happened had Trump gone to Capitol Hill. As bad as January 6th was, it would have been exponentially worse. More people would have entered the Capitol. Who, God knows what he would have said, and God knows whether or not American democracy would have been able to withstand the moment. Where would police, where would military, what would have happened on that day? We'll never know. Thank God we didn't find out. But it wasn't an event. It was part of a process that is still going on, and they're looking to do that and have the tools and mechanism and people in place in January of 2025 that they lacked in January of 2021.
Right. No, great summary, Jeff. But the other revelations, too, were just remarkable, that there apparently were conversations by people in the White House with the Proud Boys, with the Oath Keepers in advance. So they, you know, it looks like they, the White House knew what they were planning to do and didn't discourage it at all. You know, we learned about more people who wanted pardons after all this was over, about warnings inside the White House that people don't go to the Capitol. You know, you're going to get into unimaginable legal trouble if you do that. So, again, just a lot more evidence that people knew what was going to happen. They may have been part of planning it, certainly. And, it, you know, again, and this all leads back to Trump. I mean, I think the committee is building a heck of a case that this all goes back to Trump. It was part of a concerted plan over several months, going back to election night, the frivolous lawsuits, you know, the appeals to Pence, the plan of John Eastman, who also apparently wants a pardon because he knew how illegal what he was proposing was. Trump's indifference and almost wishing that Pence would come to physical harm, right? Again, it's just remarkable that this occurred inside the White House with the president leading the charge.
Mark, there were two additional Supreme Court rulings that have come down here in the last, and I think we talked a little bit about it perhaps last week, but the Supreme Court ruling on the New York case that deals with conceal carry and the broad ramifications that that might have. And then the there's let me take a time out here. Walt, were you Mark? Were you thinking to talk about religious school funding or the prayer in school, or what are we
both.
Talking about here?
We can talk about both because I think they're of a piece, Jeff. So we can talk about both.
Sure. Okay. All right. Then the third case kind of really pushes the conservative Republican, the longtime agenda here, is blurring the lines between religion in schools, religion in public life. And so there's cases that deal with funding for religious schools and prayer involving school sports that haven't got as much attention, but they paint a picture, and I think it's a picture I'll just say would probably look different if the folks who had brought the lawsuit were, say, trying to have their football team pray toward Mecca as opposed to thank God and Jesus. And so I'll just say that there seems to be a difference here, but if we're talking about Christian prayer or other prayer in these decisions.
Yeah, there have been a lot of disappointing and very conservative trends out of the Supreme Court, whether it's voting rights. You know, we now see what happened to the right to abortion. By the way, that's the first time the United States Supreme Court has ever taken away a constitutional right. And this one was in place for nearly 50 years. So set that aside. But there have been other very disturbing trends, and you point to two of them, Jeff. The first is somebody did a study on this recently, and so-called religious freedom advocates are basically almost undefeated in the Supreme Court when they take their cases there. And the two recent examples that you mentioned, where the court said that Maine had to provide subsidies to religious schools, and then that this high school had to permit a coach to pray on the field after the football game, just continues that trend. And whatever remains of the separation of church and state in this country is quickly eroding. We've seen that. We even saw it in the COVID cases, where the court consistently, allowed churches and religious groups to violate COVID assembly restrictions in the name of religious freedom. This is a very worrisome trend, because religious freedom has also been invoked to justify discrimination. And we have seen that. If somebody says, "Oh, well, I don't want to bake a cake for that gay couple, because that violates my religious views," that, I think, is very, very dangerous and poisonous. But I fear the trend that the court is on here. Same thing with guns. Striking down the New York law, which said you need to have a permit to carry a concealed weapon in public. That'll affect several other states as well. Again, a very dangerous trend there in terms of expanding so-called gun rights, in the wake of literally weekly mass shootings, and sometimes more than weekly, be they in a supermarket or a school, as we have seen, or other places, that the court has been just so hostile. And I think out of step, talk about polling. We talked about the polling on abortion. The country wants gun safety legislation. And the court is going in the other direction and making it much more difficult for even, just reasonable legislation and regulation of guns in our society. And I fear where that is headed as well.
Well, there was one other Supreme Court decision that dealt with a case where Miranda rights were not given. And the court ruled that that was permissible in certain circumstances. And I think it will be very fitting and ironic that if Donald Trump is arrested and they forget to read him as Miranda rights, that it still remains a valid arrest because of his Supreme Court.
Right. And he'll have no recourse against that officer. That's what that case was about. And again, another very disturbing trend in the court, you know, that not holding people, government officials, accountable for violations of constitutional rights in the form of damages. The court has basically said, we're not going down that path. There were a couple of cases decades ago, which kind of set us down that path. And this court has repudiated all of that as well. So that's another poor sign in terms of accountability of government officials who fail to uphold the constitutional rights of their constituents. So, Jeff, we continue to see polling, just remarkable polling, out of the Republican gubernatorial primary field as Republican voters try to figure out who the heck they're going to vote for. What's going on?
Well, now we've had a couple of polls since Ryan Kelly's arrest by the FBI that shows that he is now among the front runners. And it looks like in this field of five that there are three, Ryan Kelly, Kevin Rinke, and Tudor Dixon seem to have separated themselves a bit from Garrett Saldano and the other guy. I don't even remember his name, so I don't think anybody else will either. But the most telling thing is how half of the Republican primary voters are still undecided. We're, I think, what, 5 weeks out from the primary election, and the Republicans don't have any freaking idea who they're going to vote for. My pants have a chance. I like the sound of that. As a nice,
that's a great slogan, Jeff.
Yeah, my pants have a chance. And so that race remains very, very fluid. And I continue to look for developments. Tudor Dixon is gaining the institutional support, Right to Life of Michigan, the Michigan Chamber, Police Officers Association of Michigan, the DeVos family, and some other big Republican donors. The 800-pound gorilla in that race remains Donald Trump. If Donald Trump endorses, he will be decisive. Whoever he endorses will be the nominee. But more telling in looking at some of the races last night, the Republican primary in the state of Illinois for governor, not a state where Republicans are likely to compete and oust a Democratic incumbent, but another example of the candidate who ran as the Trumpiest candidate cleared the rest of the field. Even a well-funded, well-spending, well-qualified field, the guy ran as, I am a crazy friggin' Trumper. I'm a big lie believer. I'm a COVID denier. I'm a, you know, you name it. This guy was for it. And he got 58% in a crowded Republican primary. And so I really do think that Ryan Kelly has a great chance to emerge from this field. And if he starts to at all separate himself, get any momentum, you could see Donald Trump, who loves to come in, see which direction a parade is going, and jump out in front to try to lead it.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, Kevin. I think Trump is the big one. I think after last night's primaries, he's 9-3 in gubernatorial elections, gubernatorial primaries this year. And yeah, this does seem like a tailor-made situation. Although I would add that in Illinois, the Democratic Governors Association apparently played a big role in promoting that Trump candidate, because that's apparently who Democratic Governor Pritzker wanted to run against. I think it's going to be interesting here that, you know, all the establishment is lined up with Dixon. And, you know, the DeVos's, their relationship with Trump is mixed at best, right? I mean, Betsy DeVos resigned as education secretary after January 6th, even though she had served loyally for 3 years prior to that. So it's not altogether clear how warmly she feels for that. And I think Tudor Dixon is in kind of a tough spot, and she has talked about it publicly. And, well, you know, we can separate these two things, and I can get the support of the bosses, and I can also get the support of Trump. I think that's what she is hoping for. We won't see fundraising numbers for several weeks until right before the primary, so it's hard to tell how the fundraising is going. But other than a super PAC ads, presumably, I think, for the DeVos's on behalf of Dixon, and Rinke spending some money, but not much, We haven't seen much spending in this race either. But I don't know why people are keeping their wallets so tight. Like you said, it's only 5 weeks away, and those ballots are out there. Maybe we get a huge number of Republican voters who wait till the last minute to vote. But I got to tell you, I'm also hearing from Democrats. I'm not fomenting it, friends, but I'm hearing from Democrats who are saying, Mark, who should I vote for in the Republican primary? So there's a lot of folks out there engaging in what they think is strategic thinking about who's the Republican candidate that would be weakest to run against Governor Whitmer.
Show your support for preserving our republic at the A Republic If You Can Keep It merch store. We've got t-shirts and coffee mugs made to order for lovers of our representative democracy. Just go to our website, arepublicpodcast.com, and click on the merch store button. You aren't fully dressed until you have Ben Franklin on your chest. It's the perfect gift for that democracy lover in your life.
That's our time for this week.
We welcome your comments and questions. The email address is arepublicpodcast@gmail.com.
And we love those 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts. Every positive review moves us up the Apple ladder so more Michigan political junkies can find us.
If the Republic is still standing, we'll be back in a week. I'm Mark Brewer.
And I'm Jeff Timmer. Thanks for listening.
You can subscribe to A Republic If You Can Keep It on all major podcast sites. A Republic If You Can Keep It is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.